Thanks for listening to this episode of the Westerosi Primer. For full show notes and more about all things Westeros, head to thewesterosiprimer.com. Before I start playing the intro music, check out this friend of the show.
Are you tired of having to change to different podcasts for different topics?
You think you know what we're going to talk about.
And welcome back to Three Fates Decide.
Then we're the podcast for you. Three Fates Decide podcast ranges in a variety of topics, all the way from true crime to reviewing different movies, shows, theater, to the hottest pop culture gossip and topics.
It just sounds more dramatic that way.
All right, so this week we are going to be talking about...
You can find us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and all other podcast players. New episodes post every Friday. Feel free to also follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Three Fates Decide with the three spelled out. You can also shoot us an email at threefatesdecide@gmail.com to send us topics you want us to cover. We want to cover what you want. Want different topics? Well, then let the Three Fates Decide.
Three Fates Decide podcast.
Greetings, fellow acolytes. Welcome to another episode of the Westerosi Primer. My name is Liz. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. I hope you enjoy this journey of all things Westeros. And in this episode, I'll be talking about Jaehaerys I, aka Jaehaerys the Conciliator. Before I start the discussion, there are a couple of things to note. First, there will be some potential spoilers for people who have not read any of the books connected to A Song of Ice and Fire. There may also be potential spoilers for House of the Dragon and other shows adapted by Max in the future. So if you're okay with this, then please continue listening. Second, the information in this episode comes from the written works of George R.R. Martin and the contributors of A Wiki of Ice and Fire on Westeros.org. Check out the full show notes and other links on this show's website, thewesterosiprimer.com. With that said, let's begin. So in this episode, I'll be talking about the life and reign of the longest ruling king, Jaehaerys I, aka Jaehaerys the Conciliator. Of course, I'll be talking about a bunch of other important characters in this episode, in particular, his sister wife, Alysanne, aka the Good Queen. Some of the characters included in this episode are some of the ones who were still left alive from the previous episode. So there will be some bouncing around a bit. Also, due to the really long life and reign of King Jaehaerys I, I had to split this episode into two parts. This episode will be about his early life and the early half of his reign, which ends at AC 61. The next episode will be his later years to the very end. In order to keep things organized, I'm going to mostly talk about events year by year. As you can tell from the time length, this episode and the next one will be long. That just tells you how much was happening during the longest reign in Westeros. To kick things off, I'm going to rewind a bit and start from the beginning in a sense. I'm going to go back a few years earlier since the previous episode ended in the year AC 48. Let's go back to year AC 34 when Jaehaerys was born. His elder sister Rhaena was the one who selects a dragon egg for his crib. This is similar to what Rhaenyra does a few decades later for her brother Baelon. As we know by now, the dragon that came out of this egg is Vermithor. 2 years later, in AC 36, Alysanne is born and Rhaena picks an egg for her that becomes Silverwing. As you may recall from the previous episode, Jaehaerys and Alysanne had very chaotic childhoods. Their father became king when they were 3 and 1 respectively. They lost their father when they were 8 and 6. Then they spend the next few years as political hostages and fugitives from their uncle's wrath. That is until Jay Harris is 14 and makes a claim for the throne. And throughout all of this, we have their mother, Alyssa. While I did talk a bit about Alyssa in the previous episode, let me talk more about her that I didn't quite get to in the previous episode. Alyssa is clearly a smart, capable, and determined woman. She did everything she possibly could for her children, but even then, it wasn't always enough. As I mentioned in the previous episode, she, Jay Harris, and Alisane had wandered, searching for safety and support after the death of Queen Visenya. Eventually, they ended up at Storm's End with Lord Rhaegar Baratheon, who is pretty important to this part of the story. If you guys have listened to episode 104 of this podcast about the Stormlands, you would know that Alyssa marries Rhaegar as her second husband. Rhaegar himself is the grandson of Oris Baratheon, who was the first Lord Baratheon of Storm's End, and possibly King Aegon's bastard brother. He is the first major lord to back Jay Harris. He also was against the idea of crowning Rhaena as the ruling queen, as he believed a man should be ruling. Now that Maegor was dead in AC 48, Jay Harris would become the king with his coronation in Old Town. However, he's still underaged, which meant that a regent would be ruling on his behalf along with the Hand. In this case, Queen Alyssa was his regent and Rhaegar Baratheon was Hand as his reward for being the first major lord to back Jay Harris's claim. Unsurprisingly, Alyssa wanted revenge on Maegor's supporters. Jay Harris was prepared to forgive them, and Alyssa had to agree to her son's decision. After all, openly opposing him would weaken his position. She knew firsthand the consequences of a king being viewed as weak. However, Jay Harris did agree to execute everyone involved with torturing and killing his brother, Viserys. Alyssa would accompany her remaining children to Old Town, where they needed to reconcile the Iron Throne with Old Town. The Faith of the Seven was the greatest threat to Targaryen rule, and they needed to work together again. It's also heavily suspected that during this visit, Rhaena had her daughters switch places. There were stories stating that after this visit to Old Town, Aerya Targaryen's personality seemed different. We'll never truly know, but given the twins have opposite personalities with each other, you can read between the lines that there was a twin swap that happened. AC 49 became known as the Year of the Three Brides. Why? Well, I'm about to get to the three weddings in question. Rhaena shocked people by marrying for the second time. Her groom was Andrew Farman. This was surprising because first off, House Farman is a lower ranking house in the Westerlands. So not even as important as the Lannisters or the Rains. Secondly, he's the second son and not the oldest son. Thirdly, he's not even a decent warrior. When asked, Rhaena claimed she felt affection for Andrew and that's why she married him. However, there are rumors suggesting she only married him out of gratitude for his father sheltering her before she married Maegor. Andrew was apparently the son Lord Mark felt most affection for. There was also a suspicion that Rhaena might have been in love with Alyssa Farman, and she was closest to her brother, Andrew. Now, you listeners might be surprised by this rumor, since I never brought it up at all in the previous episode. Rhaena was apparently shy as a child and preferred animals over people. As she grew up, she felt strong affection for other girls and would rather spend more time with them over anyone else. One person in particular was Alyssa Farman, her sister-in-law, but I'll talk about her a bit more later in the episode. Rhaena's closest relationships resulted in speculation she is a lesbian or at least bisexual. I personally think a character like this would be pretty interesting to have on a TV show, but who really knows if Max would make a show about this time period. Alyssa was unsurprisingly upset and disappointed that Rhaena would marry without informing her or inviting her to the wedding. This would become a rift between mother and daughter. Rhaegar was also displeased about this since he was of the opinion that she married without permission from the crown. Though it's generally believed he was truly angry about this marriage because he had ambitions of marrying Reina to either one of his brothers or a nephew. Alyssa Velaryon would marry Rhaegar Baratheon in a wedding called the Golden Wedding. Jaehaerys didn't approve of this marriage, but he didn't publicly express this as he didn't make any objections to Rhaena's second marriage. Jaehaerys actually had his suspicions that Rhaegar just wanted to marry his mother because of the chance to gain more power. Given some of his actions later, there's probably some truth in this. Also, Jaehaerys felt that he was actually a more capable ruler than Rhaegar. Rhaena didn't attend the wedding. She still had some bitter feelings over Rhaegar refusing to support Aegon. Pretty soon, conversation turned to arranging marriages for Jaehaerys and Alysanne. Alyssa actually knew that Jaehaerys and Alysanne wanted to marry each other. She understandably feared a repeat of what happened to Aegon and Rhaena. Rhaegar proposed arrangements for Jaehaerys to marry the Archon of Tyrosh's daughter. He also conveniently wanted to have Alysanne marry his youngest brother, Oren. Of course, Jaehaerys and Alysanne find out about these arrangements and they manage to escape to Dragonstone, where they would marry each other. This wedding wasn't consummated since Alysanne was only 13 years old. Rhaegar and Alyssa headed off to Dragonstone to bring the young king and his sister back. The Kingsguard who had followed were prepared to defend their king from Rhaegar's guards. Alyssa, realizing how adamant her children were, decided to leave Dragonstone without them. Rhaegar was displeased at failing to retrieve the king, and like a typical Baratheon, plotted to bring back a larger army to storm the castle. However, his wife reminded him that both of her children had dragons. Alyssa and Rhaegar would plot to end the marriage, since it was unconsummated and still a secret at the time. During this time on Dragonstone, Jaehaerys was determined to prove to people he would be a different king from his father and his uncle. He'd spent his time on Dragonstone becoming a more capable warrior. Lords began visiting him there, and the young couple demonstrated charm and intelligence despite not truly ruling just yet. By AC 50, it got a little suspicious that Jaehaerys and Alysanne still hadn't returned. Rhaegar and Alyssa still tried to break up the married siblings, but all attempts failed. Alyssa decided to accept the marriage. However, Rhaegar publicly berates her at a small council meeting and even suggested crowning Princess Arya as the queen over Jaehaerys. This is unthinkable to everyone, as any such attempt to overthrow Jaehaerys would just create another war between dragon riders. Alyssa put her foot down and demanded Rhaegar resign from his post, which all the other council members agreed with. Rhaegar leaves King's Landing and the marriage sours as a result. Alyssa's brother Daemon Velaryon becomes the new hand of the king. Alyssa decides to retire from ruling and left it to her brother. At Storm's End, Rhaegar hatches a plan. He sends his brother Ronald to the Red Keep to basically kidnap Princess Arya. That plot was foiled since Arya was already hidden away by Alyssa's orders. Plan B was for Oren Baratheon to go to Old Town, kidnap Rhaella, and bring her back to Storm's End. He believes that Arya and Rhaella were swapped, and he plots to crown Arya as the queen. This also fails when the Faith refuses to give out Rhaella, and the Hightowers imprison the Baratheon knights. While that was going on in King's Landing, we have other things happening to Alyssa's children. Let's start with Jaehaerys. Later that year is Jaehaerys' 16th birthday, and he is legally an adult now. He returns to King's Landing to be acting king. He summons his stepfather back to court. To Rhaegar's surprise, Jaehaerys doesn't demand for his execution or that he head to the wall. Rather, he pardons Rhaegar and tells him that going forward, he would never speak against Jaehaerys and Alysanne, and orders him to be a better husband. Rhaegar asks the king if he requires any hostages in exchange. The young king merely brings the Baratheon lord to where Vermithor was being fed. What's not said is that all of the Stormlands are his hostages. Alyssa and Rhaegar go to Storm's End and don't come back until her children's second wedding. Incidentally, Jaehaerys spends time cleaning house, figuring out who to hire, fire, and retain in the court bureaucracy. One notable HR decision he made was hiring a Pentoshi merchant named Rego Draz as Master of Coin. Draz was a commoner who very quickly rose up as one of the richest merchants in Pentos. This undoubtedly convinced J. Harris to reach out and recruit him as a man who could fix the poor state of the treasury Mayor left behind. Raina had never gotten along with Franklin Farman, who was the heir to Fair Isle. Franklin was one of the many nobles and knights to join Aegon's failed campaign. He resented Raina because he felt she was ungrateful for the sacrifice men like him made for her now-dead brother husband. On top of that, she's dominated the Society of Fair Isle while the actual rulers of the island had lost respect. Lord Mark dies, and Franklin is the new lord. He makes it clear that Raina and her household should leave. Alyssa was going to follow as well, but Franklin wanted his sister to marry. Not surprising considering the type of society Westeros is. Alyssa wound up leaving given how many people were against him. After leaving, Raina and her entourage would wander around a bit in the Westerlands. She couldn't stay anywhere for long, mainly because people were interested in either gaining her favor or trying to get one of Dreamfire's eggs. Personally, it's bizarre why any of them would be foolish enough to think she'd give away an egg. Even if she did, what were they going to do with it? The most they could do is try to sell the egg. But even if you didn't sell it, how will you hatch one? And even then, it's not like anyone else except a Targaryen can ride a dragon anyway. Eventually, Raina was granted permission to stay at Dragonstone with her entourage by her brother. And that's where things really went downhill for Raina. It's now AC 51. One major thing J. Harris does at this time is that he creates the doctrine of exceptionalism. Simply put, it's an idea within the Fae that even though incest is wrong, the Targaryens are exempt from this. Basically, the argument is that as Valyrians, they are different people from the Andals, who are the main followers of the Fae. Therefore, they aren't subject to such restrictions with their power to control dragons being a sign of this exception. Shae Harris even had a group of seven speakers who traveled the realm promoting and defending the Targaryens for the next few years. While most of them are sympathetic septons and septas, one of them was actually the former queen, Eleanor Costain. If you listened to the previous episode, you'll remember who she is. This eventually becomes a full tenet of the faith after a deal was struck with House Hightower to elect the next High Septon as a Hightower who promotes the idea. Months later, after the second wedding, Alysanne was pregnant with her and J. Harris's first child. The royal couple would participate in another tour around the kingdoms. Unlike Aegon and Rhaena, they both travel with their two full-grown dragons to dissuade any remaining faith militant from attacking them. This, unfortunately, didn't prevent Alysanne from being assaulted by three holy women while stopping in Maidenpool. Alysanne survives the attack, but she goes into premature labor and the baby dies. He was named Aegon. In AC 52, Alyssa gives birth to a healthy baby boy named Boromund Baratheon, though she had a hard time after childbirth. It's not too surprising since she's 45 years old at this point and this is her seventh baby. Rhaegar's brother Boris isn't all that happy about this, considering he was previously the heir to Storm's End. Not a lot happened in AC 53, though I will note two births. In this year, Corlys Velaryon was born. This is the same Corlys Velaryon we know from House of the Dragon. He is the grandson of Daemon Velaryon, who, as I said earlier, was the Hand of the King and Jay Harris's uncle. Also in this year, Alysanne gives birth to her second child, Daenerys. So yes, the Mother of Dragons isn't the first Daenerys in this dynasty. AC 54 was a year when a lot of chaotic events happened. This is the year where a lot of things go very downhill for Raina, like I mentioned earlier. Pretty much everyone in Raina's household, except for Raina, didn't want to be on Dragonstone. Alyssa was getting bored being there. She's a sailor at heart and wanted to be able to travel. However, Raina didn't want her dearest friend to leave. Also, Alyssa had no money since her brother refused her inheritance due to her refusal to obey him. Arya was resentful of her mother. The earliest years of her life was away from her mother, so they were practically strangers to each other. Dragonstone was super boring compared to King's Landing, where she was for a short time. And some of this resentment will build up even more once Alyssa leaves, since they had become friends. Alyssa made it clear she was going to leave, and Raina was upset about this, but didn't stop her. Alyssa conveniently managed to steal 3 eggs on her way out. She'd later sell them to the Sea Lord of Braavos, who denies having them. Their suspicion that Daenerys' dragon eggs centuries later are actually those eggs, but it's honestly just one of many fan theories out there. We don't ultimately know for sure what happened to Alyssa after this. The last known of her is that years later, Corlys Velaryon, the one we know from House of the Dragon, would find a shipwreck on one of his travels. The wreck matched the ship Alyssa Farman used after selling the eggs. Even Rhaena's husband was having a miserable time on Dragonstone. Andra wasn't particularly smart. He wasn't even a decent warrior, which is a major problem in a society that places emphasis on battle skills. The fact he wasn't talented in anything meant he was constantly made fun of. In fact, Rhaena and the women who followed her openly made fun of him. Arya regularly played cruel pranks on him. Not sure what it says when a grown man can't fend off a child who's not even 10 years old. All he did was drink. Every attempt to try and be helpful was rejected and mocked by his wife. Alyssa is pregnant again, but she's had a lot of trouble with this pregnancy. Similar to what we saw with Emma Arryn a few decades later, they did a primitive C-section on Alyssa. She dies trying to give birth to her final baby, Jocelyn Baratheon. If you've listened to episode 104 about the Stormlands, then you already know that Jocelyn Baratheon is the mother of Rhaenys Targaryen, the queen who never was. But we'll get more about that in a later episode. Jaehaerys and Alysanne managed to arrive in time to see their mother. Unfortunately, Rhaena was too late and her mother died before she could try to repair their relationship. Rhaena threatens to kill Rhaegar and burn Storm's End if he mistreated his children or married another wife. Publicly, he dismisses her threats, but he never did remarry. Later that year, people began dying on Dragonstone. Andrew only wonders if Rhaena would mourn his death the way she mourns the death of her companions, which gets him a slap in the face. The deaths get reported back to King's Landing as there's suspicion of a disease outbreak happening. However, Rhaego Draz recognized the symptoms as that of the Tears of Lys. For those of you who don't recall, the Tears of Lys is a colorless, odorless poison that was actually used by Lysa Arryn to kill her husband, as Littlefinger tells her to. A message was sent to Rhaena, who realized Andro poisoned everyone. He admits he did it because he hated the mockery and wanted his revenge on them. Rhaena orders he be gelded, but he manages to jump out of a window to his death. She has his corpse fed to dragons. Alysanne goes to Dragonstone to try to comfort her sister and niece. Rhaena is angry and grief-stricken. Arya is somewhat resentful of everyone around her. She resented her mother for abandoning her for a chunk of her life. She also resented the fact she was no longer the heir to the throne. Most of all, Arya wished she could leave Dragonstone and go back to King's Landing, where there was excitement. Unfortunately, Rhaena refused to allow Arya to leave, so Alysanne couldn't take her back to the Red Keep. Daemon Velaryon would resign his position as Hand. He claimed that the deaths of his sister and his niece Lyanna Velaryon, who was one of Rhaena's companions on Dragonstone, was too much. Lord Miles Smallwood would take over the Handship. At some point, Arya would claim Balerion as her dragon. She takes advantage of this and uses Balerion to escape Dragonstone. Rhaena would spend the next year wandering all over Westeros trying to find any signs of her missing daughter. Rhaena would spend a few months on Estermont, where one of her cousins was living there with her daughter and son-in-law. AC 55 had a couple of important things happening. During this time, Jaehaerys, Septon Barth, Alysanne, and other advisors began reforming and codifying the various laws in the kingdoms. This project will take a few decades to be completed, but it's definitely something that needed to be done. Also that year, Alysanne gives birth and has a son named Aemon. Interesting thing that happened is that Jaehaerys refers to Aemon as his heir rather than Daenerys, which displeases Alysanne. My personal thought is that Alysanne is being a bit hypocritical here. Why? She's trying to make an argument that Daenerys is their oldest living child and should be heir. She conveniently ignores that with her argument, their sister Rhaena should be on the Iron Throne instead of Jaehaerys. I absolutely would favor a ruling queen existing in Westeros. I just think that there needs to be consistency when you apply the principle of absolute primogeniture versus male preference primogeniture. AC 56 is when the missing Arya Targaryen returns to King's Landing. However, it's not a happy reunion. Valyrian brought the missing princess to the Red Keep, and all who saw her were horrified. Her clothes were rags, and she looked severely ill. A few days later, she would die. Officially, records would state she had contracted a fever and died from it. Her body was promptly cremated per Targaryen tradition. However, there was speculation that since Arya was young and not trained to handle such a powerful dragon, Valyrian just flew off with her to Valyria. There were some reasons why people on the Small Council suspected this. You imagine that Valyrian is the largest and oldest of the dragons at this time. He returned with lots of scars and injuries he definitely didn't have before flying off with Arya. You just have to wonder what in the world could possibly injure him. Not to mention the Grand Maester and Septon Barth were the only ones to attend to the poor princess in her final days. It was claimed that while she was suffering from a terrible fever, there were rumors and stories about what really happened to her. One of the King's Guard had carried the princess to the Grand Maester after collapsing from Valyrian's back. Sir Lucamor would later tell the king that her eyes were bloodshot and she was covered with swollen bumps on her body. He swears something was moving inside her. I won't describe anything further than that, as it would be super squeamish to some listeners. I will, however, put a link on the website with the full show notes if you're really that curious. Rhaena would receive notice her daughter arrived and died. Jaehaerys asked his sister if she wanted to inter Arya's ashes on Dragonstone. Rhaena would only state Arya despised being on Dragonstone. She would fly over the sea and release her daughter's ashes to the air. Rhaena had no desire to return to Dragonstone, where all that was left were ghosts. She also had no desire to stay at the Red Keep with all the politicking going on. She was angry at Alysanne's suggestion of getting remarried and having more children. Ultimately, she went to Harrenhal and was a guest of the current ruling family there, House Towers. She gained a reputation as a reclusive woman who would be a hostess that welcomed travelers that stopped by at the castle, but otherwise avoided strangers. She would stay there until her death in AC 73. Her ashes would be interred at the God's Eye where Aegon died. As a result of Arya's horrific fate, Jaehaerys decreed it was forbidden for anyone to travel to Valyria. If any go and attempt to return to Westeros, they were to be killed on sight. Undoubtedly, the horrible condition Arya returned in made the king concerned those horrors could spread in Westeros. In AC 57, there were some improvements made in King's Landing, including updating and expanding the sewer system, creating public fountains, and other improvements in the city. While that is great, as we've seen in House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones, the Crown really didn't do much to maintain public infrastructure. That is just horrific to think about from a 21st century perspective. Jaehaerys also selected Septon Barth to become Hand. A really unconventional choice, but surprisingly, he would turn out to be a pretty astute Hand. In fact, he'd wind up serving 41 years until his death. But I'll get to that in the next episode. The other important thing that happened this particular year was the birth of Prince Baelon. AC 58 was a major year where the Targaryens visit the North. Jaehaerys was forced to stay behind in King's Landing to mediate trade disputes between Pentos and Tyrosh. Alysanne and their entourage headed off first so they wouldn't insult the waiting Starks. Alisane does a pretty good tour of the North to meet the people and learn more about the problems the Northmen were dealing with. It took months before Jaehaerys got to the North. By then, Alisane headed up to the Wall to learn more about the Night's Watch. There's actually a later abandoned keep with a village called Queen's Crown, named in her honor since she had stopped there on the tour. Also, one of the castles at the Wall was renamed Queen's Gate in her honor. Alisane proposed that additional land be given to the Night's Watch that would later be called the New Gift. The Northmen were displeased that land that would otherwise be used for their own production was basically given away without their consent by the Queen. It's also pretty annoying when you think about how, by the time Jon Snow gets to the Wall, the New Gift is mostly empty, abandoned land. There are so few men in the Night's Watch that security is laxed. Free folk raid there so regularly that people left. I'm more surprised that later generations of Starks never petitioned for the return of the New Gift to develop it again. Another important development was that Alisane heard about the complaints women had with First Knight privileges noble lords were doing. Alisane and Barth persuaded Jaehaerys to abolish this custom. Unsurprisingly, there were many displeased with this, which just tells you what kind of lords were running things. However, the small folk, who were often the biggest victims of this, were happy and praised the young rulers. So I think that's way more important. AC 59 was a bad year. In fact, technically, it was a bad 2 years because this is when an epidemic known as the Shivers happened. Now, I'm not in the medical field, but to me, George was probably using the plague, aka Black Death or bubonic plague, as the inspiration for this disease. The symptoms described are pretty similar. Also, the fact the disease was spread mostly in port cities also fits. On a side note, the real-life disease is bacterial, and it actually still exists in modern times. Yes, Yersinia pestis still exists, along with the fleas that can spread them. The only reason why it's not a horrific pandemic is because we have things like better pest control, methods to detect the disease, and really importantly, antibiotics. But this is not a medical podcast or a history podcast. Point, though, is that unfortunately, a number of people die. This included half of the small council and, tragically, Princess Daenerys. The grieving parents didn't do too well initially. Jaehaerys focused on work, which, to be fair, he really needed to, since a number of people in the administration died during the epidemic. Alisane withdrew from ruling with her husband, though she soon realized she was pregnant again. Later, in AC 60, Alyssa Targaryen was born. Rhaego Draz was blamed for the disease purely because he's a foreigner. Also, there was some resentment over the increases of different taxes in order to cover budget shortfalls. He was killed by an angry mob while he was traveling through the city. Jaehaerys and some of the remaining guards went out to find the culprits and brutally killed them as punishment for their crimes. In AC 61, there was a Dornish bandit known as the Vulture King leading a band of outlaws. This is not the same Vulture King who was running around in the first war with Dorne during Aegon the Conqueror's reign. Boris Baratheon joined up with his Vulture King and used his own knowledge of the Stormlands to lead raids against the people. By this point, Rhaegar had aged and gotten weaker despite being only in his 40s. He brings Jocelyn and two of his Baratheon nieces to King's Landing, asking that they be wards of the crown while he goes off to fight against the raiders. He heavily suspects he'll die due to his health, so he hopes Jaehaerys and Alisane will be the girl's guardians and keep an eye out for Bormund as well. Rhaegar doesn't want to die in his bed. He wants to die in battle like a proper warrior. Jaehaerys decides to go join in the fight, which only makes sense because these raiders are a threat to his domain. Ultimately, Jaehaerys used Vermithor to burn the camps. Rhaegar kills the Vulture King in a one-on-one duel. Jaehaerys kills Boris just so Rhaegar wouldn't be put in a position of being a kinslayer. It's only 6 months later in AC 62 that Rhaegar dies. And that just about covers the first part of Jaehaerys' life and reign. If you're interested in finding out more for yourself, feel free to go to the full show notes where I will have links. Though be aware, if you do any of this research, there will be spoilers to the novels, House of the Dragon, and Max's future adaptations. Thank you for listening, and tune in to the next episode where I get to the rest of Jaehaerys' reign, including the infamous choosing of an heir at Harrenhal. What did you think of this episode? Check out the WesterosiPrimer.com and let me know what you think of this episode. If you have a friend or two that might like the show, make sure to share.